Da, 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 da. Good evening, everybody. It's time for another exciting chapter of The Adventures of Robinson Crusoe by Daniel Defoe here on Bedtime Stories with Thompson. Boy, that was exciting last one, huh?
Yeah.
Crazy cannibals and stuff. Well, this one's called Chapter 8.
The first sound of a man's voice.
For the next year, Robinson thought about nothing but escaping from the island. By now, he longed for somebody to speak to, somebody to tell him where he was, and somebody to rescue him. His hopes for rescue had been so high a few months earlier when a Spanish ship ran aground on the rocks. But when Robinson went for his boat and sailed out to the ship, he found only dead bodies and a small amount of cargo, which he brought ashore. The muskets, gunpowder, and clothing would be of some use to him, and the only survivor, the ship's dog, would take the place of his first pet, who had died many years earlier. But how useless were the bags of gold he had found. They couldn't buy him another human being to talk to. The idea of escape was now becoming so strong that Robinson could no longer resist it. He thought about it during the day and dreamed about it at night. The same dream kept repeating itself over and over, night after night. In the dream, the savages came to the island with a prisoner. The prisoner escaped from the savages and ran to Robinson for help. Robinson took him in, hid him, and soon had a faithful servant. This prisoner, a native, would help him escape to the mainland. This dream became so real that Robinson decided there was only one way for him to escape, and that was to rescue one of the prisoners the savages brought with them. Then the rest of his dream would come true. So Robinson began his watch on the shore. He watched for 6 months. He watched for a year. He watched for a year and a half. Still, no canoes appeared on the sea. Then one morning, in his 25th year on the island, Robinson awoke and found the canoes he had been searching for. There were 5 of them pulled up on the shore on his side of the island. The savages who had been in them had already landed and were out of sight. But 5 canoes could mean 20 or 30 men. How could Robinson attack them single-handedly? He climbed to the top of the hill above his fortress and saw 30 dancing men around a fire. Their meat was cooking, but Robinson couldn't be sure what meat it was. As he watched, he saw 2 men being dragged from the boats towards the fire. One of them was immediately knocked down with a club, and the cannibals began cutting him open. The other prisoner was left standing by himself until they were ready for him. Seeing himself unguarded and hoping to save his life, the native suddenly jumped away from them and ran into the woods. He was heading in Robinson's direction. As Robinson gazed at these events, he couldn't help but wonder, "Can my dream be coming true?" Then he turned his attention back to the savages and saw that only 3 of them were sent after the fleeing native. Robinson cheered silently as he saw the native outrunning the savages. "Keep running, my man," he whispered. "You'll make it." Then the native came to the creek. "Please, God," prayed Robinson, "let the man swim. Let him swim well and swiftly." The man dove in and, with strong, swift strokes, made it across the creek in seconds. When the 3 savages reached the creek, only 2 of them seemed to know how to swim. The 3rd could not, so he turned and went back towards the beach. The 2 savages were not as swift as the natives, so he was well ahead of them by the time they reached the other side of the creek. At this moment, Robinson knew that it was his fate to save the poor native's life. He ran down his ladder and grabbed his guns. He climbed over his fortress and took a shortcut to the creek. Within minutes, Robinson stood just 10 feet behind the fleeing native. He called out to him. The man turned and stared at Robinson. Robinson waved to him, calling him to come back, but the native was too frightened to move. Soon, Robinson heard the savages approaching. He didn't want to fire his gun and warn the others, so he knocked the 1st savage out with the gun's butt end. When the 2nd savage saw his partner attacked, he pulled out his bow and arrow. There was no time to club him now, so Robinson fired. The savage fell dead. The frightened native stared at his enemies on the ground. He was so terrified of the fire and the noise from Robinson's gun that he couldn't move. Robinson called to him again and made signs for him to come closer. The man started walking, trembling with each step. As he came closer, he began kneeling on the ground every 10 or 12 steps. This was his way of thanking Robinson for having saved his life. Robinson smiled at him. The man came closer, and when he reached Robinson, he kneeled down again and kissed the ground. Then, laying his head on the ground, he placed Robinson's foot firmly on top of his head. This was his way of swearing to be Robinson's slave forever. Robinson lifted him up and patted him on the shoulder. Just then, the 1st savage, who had only been knocked out, began to move. Robinson pointed to him, and the native spoke some words which Robinson could not understand. Yet the words sounded pleasant to Robinson's ears, for they were the first sounds of a man's voice that he had heard, except his own, in 25 years. But there was no time for enjoying voices now, for the savage was already sitting up. The native pointed to the sword hanging from Robinson's belt. Robinson pulled it out and handed it to him. No sooner was the sword in his hand than he ran to his enemy and, with one blow, cut his head off. When the job was done, the native returned to Robinson and laid the sword at his feet. Then he went over to the savage Robinson had shot. He looked at the dead body with a puzzled expression. Robinson understood that this fellow was wondering how he could have killed the savage from such a distance without touching him. Robinson nodded his permission, and the native turned the body over and examined both sides. The small hole in the chest made him shake his head in wonder. Robinson would explain later, but for now both men had to be buried so they wouldn't be found by the rest of the group. Once that was done, Robinson led the native back to his fortress. There, he gave him food and water and made a place for the tired young man to lie down. Within minutes, the poor creature was sound asleep. End of chapter 8. Ooh, that was exciting. Boy.
That was 1, 2, 3.
Good night, everybody.